Welcome back to the Meta Makers podcast. My name is Davis.
And this is Dylan.
And we have a special guest today. His name is Ethan. How are you doing, Ethan?
I'm doing well.
So we're going to talk about slacklining. We're going to talk about a balanced lifestyle and some other things. We'll see where that conversation flows. But to start off, I would like to just ask you two, how did you meet in the first place? Because I actually have no idea.
Well, oh, wow.
Sounds like you had a better recollection than I did.
Yeah, Ethan. It's very clear to me. I've told the story a few times. All right, so Charles the First show. You know, I was there. You were there, I guess. I didn't see you during the show, Dylan. But you were outside of the venue afterwards, and I was raging my face off and had danced with a bunch of people. And you were sitting on the ground talking to some girl that I had danced with briefly. Not any kind of serious way, but we connected a little bit. And when she saw me, she grabbed me and pulled me down and pulled me into Dylan's lap, like literally into his lap. And then almost as soon as she did that, her ride came and she left. Right? So I was just kind of lying in your lap, looking up at you. And then you said, I think this was the meeting that was meant to happen tonight. Yeah. Wow. And then I don't know how we got on that conversation, but we started talking about festivals and, you know, and then all of our own respective work. And then it became clear that we had some mutual interests and could help one another.
That is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I think I was sitting outside, just needed some air and was feeling like I hadn't met the right person that I wanted to meet tonight, and you literally fell into my lap.
So yeah,
it's pretty amazing, man. So would you like to share with the community a little bit about what your respective festival work is and some of your interest?
All right, so let's see. So GGBY, Highline Gathering, it's one of the larger, if not the largest, Highline Gathering in this neck of space right now, and that happens the week of Thanksgiving, and I am the medical coordinator for that event, and then I also am a medical director, I think that's the title, for Breathe Festival, which is another slacklining event that happens in Spencer, Indiana, and then I do a bunch of organizing work here on the East Coast for smaller, more local, less let's say official events. I do a lot of organizing there.
Well, let's back up for a second. What is slacklining, and why do you love it so much?
What is slacklining? Oh, that's a good question. So slacklining, oof. Okay, hope the slacklining community doesn't hate me for saying this. This is how I like to start it. Just for anyone who doesn't know, I say it's like a modern form of tightrope walking, but it's not tightrope walking. Please don't call it tightrope walking. If you just always give a disclaimer if you're talking to a slackliner and you're calling it tightrope walking, you know it's not tightrope walking. But essentially, it is the same idea. You're balancing on a small diameter or width-wide piece of rope. And in slacklining's case, it is a flat rope we call webbing. And you put that between two points and you simply walk on it. The main difference between tightrope walking and slacklining is that a tightrope uses a steel cable and is expensive and cumbersome, and you have to walk with like a dinky little pole. Whereas in slacklining, it's all very loose. We use our arms and our own body to compensate for our shifts in balance in order to walk. And it's much cheaper, and we can set up pretty much anywhere we want.
Wow. So can you give us a little history into like slacklining? Like how did that come about, like compared to the
tightrope walking? Slacklining, if you want to take tightroping back one more level, it's like funambulism. Funambulism is like the practice of like balance, like balancing like sports, activities, anything like that. And so that's been going on for thousands of years, right? They've been doing that in the circus and in all over the world for thousands of years. Slacklining started more, I think it was the 70s or the 80s in Yosemite. The rock climbers would string up webbing that they used for climbing between like two trees, and then they would just on their off days, on their rest days, they would practice balancing on the on that webbing. And then, oh God, this is terrible because we have like all this history very, very well written down, and I'm not super well versed in it. But there was one guy in particular who's sort of like pioneered the slack, like the slacklining side. He, you know, he got really into the actual slacklining, and so pushed that until he took it up to a high line with the Lost Arrow Spire in Yosemite. And you can go see this on YouTube. Actually, there's like cassette footage of this guy walking the first slackline between the Lost Arrow Spire and I guess El Cap.
Did he have a like a harness on?
Yeah, yeah, he did. He did have a harness, but it was all like real, like old school. Like it would be real janky nowadays if you did anything like he did.
So basically, a slack rope is called a slack rope because there's more slack in
actually,
the line.
There's something called
bends.
Slack rope. And that's slack different than
oh,
slack line.
Snap.
Slack
that.
Rope is like rope. It's literally rope. Where okay. like slack line is flat. It's flat rope. It's a very it's like it's called webbing. And you've seen it like your backpack straps, ratchet straps. Like that's webbing. We call that webbing. Like if you go buy some, it'll be called webbing probably.
So why do people love slack lining so much?
Man. We're kind of in the golden age where like there's it's a small community, and so everyone who gets drawn towards it, there's like this kinship that pulls people together in that community. There's a small number of people, so you when you have a small number of people doing something, you identify very strongly with those people, and especially in something like slacklining where the usually the end goal is like highlining, like but most of us who slackline, we slackline to then go out in the mountains or buildings or whatever and put up high lines, and that that act forces people to work together and connect together on a level of our lives depending on one another, because our rigging, like our lives depend on our rigging. We do everything, like we set up everything, so we have to trust one another, and so there's a lot of very strong connection that is built from a group of people partaking in an activity like that. You see the same thing. I mean, this isn't necessarily like a positive thing, but like in the military, right? You see people who bond so strongly because their lives depend on one another. And when you have something like that, especially in the face of a more recreational activity that's fun and it pushes your boundaries in like a positive way and everyone is there to support you, it creates a huge sense of community. And I think that's one of the biggest draws is that it makes us so close. Like there are some of my best friends are people that I just see every once in a while if it's at some kind of slacklining event, you know, but I see them so much less than I see plenty of other people that I'm much less connected
with. Wow. That it's like teamwork. It's just bonding over that. So what are, what are some of the, so it's kind of like adrenaline, right? As well.
Mm-mm.
I mean, no, when you're up there, does it
adrenaline.
Switch off in your brain? Cause honestly, for everyone that tries slacklining for the first time, you get on there, and as you've explained to me, your muscles in your ankles literally aren't, or like whatever,
your legs
aren't developed.
Yeah, the
yet.
First thing
so
you're
going to
do.
That's why everyone just has like,
that
you know,
shake. The first
baby
thing you
giraffe
do,
legs.
You put, yeah, you, exactly. You put that first leg on the line, and then it shakes like wildly back and forth, and you're like, this is impossible.
And how long does it take for that to... You know,
it depends. Some people get over
that
really quickly. Others don't. It kind of depends on your level of self-preservation, like how much you're like worried about your own harm to yourself, because you know you got to throw yourself at it a little bit.
So instead of adrenaline, it's balance and breath, right?
Right. I mean, all right. Like... So no to the adrenaline, right? Wow, a lot of people like to be like, oh, like slacklining is an extreme sport, which is extreme. It simulates extremeness.
Dude,
like
you are literally walking on skyscrapers across two buildings and you look down and you're like 28 stories, you know, and you're connected by a harness, which hopefully works and usually does.
Right, it does.
And I rock climb and I get that, you know, I trust the harness.
Yeah.
But still, when you look down, I mean, I would have adrenaline personally.
So someone described it once as to me as your lizard brain. So when you go up to a high line or at the edge of a cliff, you look over and you have very primitive fears and feelings that come up, and they're normal. That's your lizard brain. That's the evolution that said, hey, if you go over this cliff, you'll die, right? And so you're fighting that. Let's not say fighting it. I mean, there is a fight. There's a struggle in there, but you're trying to work with that. You're trying to learn that, and you're trying to overcome that, because you can't walk a high line or a slack line if you are experiencing the physiological stress response that happens with adrenaline. Wow. Your heart rate goes up, your breath goes up, you become less controlled, you become less balanced inside, and that throws you off, that throws your body off.
So would you consider it kind of like a meditation?
Definitely.
Okay, well,
a moving meditation, as Lynn Hill would call it.
Okay.
Famous rock climber.
But how do you get to that mindset? Like, for example, I skateboard, okay, and when someone learns to drop in on a quarter pipe, they are usually scared. Everyone's scared. I mean, we've been skating for years. Like, dude, come on, you got it. Like, you just got to go for it. And you, like, there's a tipping point where your mind changes and you're just like, you know what? I'm over it and I'm going to try it. And then you usually fall. And then you're like, yes, I did it. And then you get back up and you do it again. And so, like, where's the tipping point in slacklining?
So that sounds very similar to me. The thing with the tipping point, especially on a high line where when you are sitting on the line, there's no ground below, you can't touch the ground, right? Which is different from a slack line that you'd rig over the ground where, say, you can sit on it, but then you have the ground to give you some balance, right? Your feet. And so you don't feel so put off if you're not used to that. But on a high line, as soon as you're sitting on it, you're gonna feel that thing in your gut that's like, oh my God, I have to balance. I have to like control my body here. Like there's a way to sit on here. There's a way to relax on here. Because you'll see a lot, people who have been slacklining over the ground, they'll come, they want a high line, they're really stoked about it. And they'll be like, all right, what are your goals? That's what I'll say. What do you want to get out of this? Like, well, you know, if I can just stand up and take a step, like that'll be good. And I'll be like, you know, if you can do that, that's going to be fucking incredible. But, you know, also think, just going out there and sitting out there is an accomplishment. Literally just tying into a harness, sitting on the anchor, scooting your butt out, looking down, making sure everything's tied together appropriately, and then you're like, all right, now I'm going to scoot out onto this line.
Okay, so what are some techniques for balancing on the slack line? And so, like, also mental techniques.
So, okay, so when you start, the classic advice you'll get is don't look at your feet. You want to pick a point in front of you, right? So you get to a line. Let's say you've never slacklined before. It's usually going to be a couple feet off the ground, like maybe 2 feet off the ground. You're going to put a foot up on it, and then what I'm going to tell you is, I want you to look straight ahead, and I don't want you to look at your feet. I want you to focus on a point. I want you to put your arms up, and then you're going to step up. I'll put my hand next to you. Like, if you want to grab it, I won't hold you. You use me for your balance. And that's the start. And then it's just one foot in front of the other. It's just, well, you're just walking.
How do you know, like, where the line is without looking down?
Well, it goes straight. You know, it only goes straight. So
you just got to feel it. You know?
You just got to put one foot in front of the other, man. How do you walk normally? You don't look at the ground.
I do look where I'm standing.
Well, you kind of imagine you're, like, being pulled over by a cop and have to walk a straight line, right?
Like, yeah, it's kind of like that, I guess.
I also looked out of my face.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So just want to ask you, like, because it sounds like there's a sort of wow factor with putting a high line, you know, up against the Eiffel Tower across the canyon or something like that. So what are some of the remarkable feats that you've accomplished?
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. So actually, it's today. Today's Saturday. So last weekend, as a crew, as an East Coast crew, myself and a group of, I want to say 8 other people, accomplished a project that we've been working on, or at least building up to for years, literally.
Still good.
Oh, yeah, I can still hear myself. Okay.
The power just went out.
Power just cut out, but I think we're all right. The show goes on. Yeah, it's a feature in West Virginia called Champ Rocks. And I believe I have read on the internet that it is the tallest rock face on the East Coast. It represents the tallest rock face, and it's like 400 to 500 feet tall, and we rigged a line between two of these fins, two of these like 400-ish foot tall fins. We had to climb up those fins, haul up all of our gear, fly a fishing line across, our tag line, and then pull across a little bit of a bigger line, and then pull the slack line across, and we rigged this line that we've literally been, or this the first line in this area that we've literally been looking at for years, and that we knew at one point like it existed, but we knew we weren't ready. We were like, we don't have like the tactics, we don't have the experience to go at a project like this. Last weekend was like was a really, really big weekend for us. So that's, I mean, that of recent, that is our, that's our kind of our. So
how many days did that take you?
We started on Thursday, and there were a couple hiccups that we ran into, but we had the line rigged by Saturday. So we started climbing Thursday. We fixed lines, which means like for every pitch of climbing, we had a rope fixed. We had it like permanently there for the time that we were going to be there. And then we did that on both sides, and then there was getting all the gear up. And
wait a second. So you're rock climbing first of all.
Yes.
And you've got rock climbing shoes on.
Yeah.
We've okay. Got, awesome. All of our rock climbing. So this gear. Is lead climbing essentially, yes. And you're putting your own clips, like metal devices, into the cracks of this rock and twisting them and putting your rope into them. So that's what's securing your body weight.
So that's trad climbing. And okay. We thought we were going to have to do that, but it turns out this Champ is kind of this secret, becoming not really a secret place where there's, this is actually, man, I don't know. It's going to be fucked that I say this. I don't think it is. I think it's okay. It is the only true multi-pitch sport climbing on the East Coast, and it's kind of unknown.
Can you share what pitch means for our listeners?
A pitch is one, oh god, that's kind of tough. When you're at a climbing gym and you climb to the top and you get to that top and you're like, okay, I'm done, like you've climbed one pitch. Okay. So climbing a second pitch would mean that you get the person who was catching you, belaying you at the bottom, you'd bring them up to where you are now, okay. And then they would keep climbing, and that would be the second pitch,
oh my God.
And then the third pitch, and then the fourth pitch, and this was like 4 to 5 pitches. So not super tall. I mean, when you consider that, to say the tallest sport climb in the world in El Potro Chico, Mexico, is like 23 pitches, right? So that's like much, much longer. But we're on the East Coast of the United States, where the mountains are a billion years old, and you know, they're all worn down to nubs. So the fact that we have a piece of rock that is 500 feet tall is really special and like kind of unheard. It's kind of unheard of.
That's amazing.
I mean, we know, people know it's there, but not a lot of people know that it's good to rock climb. It's definitely been kept under wraps. Wait, because
just slacklining in general, you're saying, or this?
No,
spot?
For rock climbing. This is more for rock climbing. Okay. It's been kept because it's all private owned land. A lot of it is privately owned, and so there's like private landowners that we have to be really respectful of, not to be trespassing on their land. And there have been issues in the past, and so it's
you
difficult.
Just talk to them, like, hey, we're
not only did we accomplish our goal of rigging this line, like, okay, we made these connections with the landowners, with like three of the main surrounding landowners, and they are super cool with us now, and are like supporting what we do, and they want to help us do some of the stuff that we want to do, which is exciting because there are some much bigger projects. Like this first one we did was tiny, like compared to what we're going to do there.
Well, it sounds like you complete one thing and then the next thing just ends up getting bigger and
bigger.
This
is like
bigger.
The maiden voyage, so as one of our friends was saying, this is the maiden voyage on what's going to be a much bigger project.
Right, so it seems like your greatest accomplishment is just yet to come.
Can I just ask how you get the how do you get the line across?
Drone. We flew a drone.
What? Wait, so I thought you used a fishing line.
Yeah, we attach a fishing line
to the drone.
To the drone,
and then you
fly that across.
Drone. Okay, so what if you didn't have a drone? Would you be able to do it?
This line in particular.
How long was it?
This line was only 200 feet, so it wasn't super long.
I feel like that's really long.
Well, okay, consider this. The world record line was walked like 2 or 3 weeks ago, the new world record, and guess how long that was if I didn't tell you already.
1,000 feet.
Dude, I've rigged a line here on the East Coast longer with 1,000 feet. Go up. Keep
12,000.
12,000? No.
463 feet.
Nah, man.
Yeah, he's done that, but we're talking about a world record.
World saying it's longer.
Yeah, yeah, way
it's
longer
much
than
longer. 12,000 would be more. That'd be like over 2 miles.
He said 400. No, you said 400 after that.
Well, you said 12,000 and then 400. Okay, the world record, the new record, no, it's 2 kilometers, which is, let's see, in miles, what is that?
Well,
no,
no,
1.6 kilometers is a mile. So like a mile and change, let's say. Yeah, and 2 people crossed that without falling.
Oh, my gosh.
In Canada. Yeah,
and that line must be super expensive. Like, isn't your gear pretty expensive?
Oh God,
do you want to share with our listeners a little bit? Like,
thousands of dollars. It's why I bought an ambulance to put all of my gear.
Because it was expensive.
Because it's so much gear, and it's extremely expensive. I mean, when you hoard gear like I do.
So you have an ambulance, but share with our listeners what you do for your day job and what you do, you know, pretty much every day.
Every day. Well, only 3 days a week, really.
Wow.
But that's enough. I'm a nurse. I work in the Northern Virginia. I serve the Northern Virginia area, specifically Alexandria, Virginia, at Inova Alexandria Hospital in the medical surgical ICU.
Wow.
That is where I make my living. And
that's amazing. And one thing we haven't shared with our listeners yet is that Ethan is actually going to be leading this Slackline activation at Beauty in the Backyard this year. So Ethan, let's dive into that a little bit. What's your title? You know that we like to let everybody choose their titles. What did you choose?
Well, I thought about it for like 2 seconds, and for the first thing that came to mind, it made a lot of sense, was the director of Slack Life. I felt like Slack Life has a lot of meaning. Like, that word has a lot of meaning in the slacklining community. It was coined by a guy named Andy Lewis, I believe, based out of Moab. You can probably find him on Instagram, Sketchy Andy Lewis. And he's written, talked about all kinds of things about the slack life. And essentially that just represents like your world revolving around slacklining and the pursuit of that balance and that vertical life. And so it has a lot of meaning in the slackline community, but I thought that was also a title that non-slackliners could hear and appreciate and kind of get a sense of what we're trying to do. Like, when I say director of Slack Life, like that, like, you guys still connect with that, right? Mm-hmm, you're still able to like hear that and be like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. Like, slacklining, slack life. Like,
I just thought you weren't working hard enough.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's part. We try to do that.
Slacker.
That's it. Yeah, we're slackers. That's the label we get.
So can you like delve in a little bit more and what people can expect? I mean, if they've never highlined before or slackline, as well. Like, what are some of those things that they're gonna?
So we're
to do?
Trying to make.
Trying.
We are doing this. We are doing. Yes. Well. Hey, hold on. Let's be fair. It hasn't actually happened yet.
So you could say we are planning. We are planning.
These are the things we are planning. We have goals, some expectations. We try not to create too many. But we have some goals for what we're trying to create for this event, because this represents, to me, it represents a little bit of a turning point in the slacklining world, because so far, I mean, we've had a lot of interaction between mainstream like stuff, events and slacklining, but it's mostly been on a performance level. So it's either been you're either at a slacklining festival and it's all slackliners, everyone slacklines, or also a bunch of yoga people, but like it is focused on slacklining run by slackliners. The other side of that is the performance aspect. So having it be like a kind of separated thing from the general crowd, right? There's the crowd, and then there's a slackliner, they're a performer, they kind of, you know, to the people who don't know, they just seem like circus performers, basically. And this represents, to me, bringing the middle ground where this will not just be for performance, it won't just be for slackliners, but we're going to create a portal so that people who don't slackline can find their way into it if they would like. You know, there will be a way for everyone at every level to access slacklining and to enjoy it. And hopefully we can find some new slackers, some unknown slackers.
So for the people that have never slacklined before and based on this conversation realize that it's really cool, what can they do in the meantime before Beauty in the Backyard to get ready for the slackline?
Oh man, yeah. So you can go buy a slackline.
And if they were to go buy a slackline, where would they go? What type of slackline would they get?
Jerry, shout out to you. Balance Community is the first place that I would recommend going to. I say shout out to Jerry because Jerry Mashevsky is kind of one of those pioneers in the sport. He's been doing this for like 8 or 10 years now, and he developed, I guess, what might be one of the first, or at least now the major slackline gear designer and retailer. There are a lot of other ones. I don't want to take any credit away from a lot of the amazing gear that is being produced nowadays, but he definitely was a pioneer in that. And so he runs a company called Balance Community, which designs and creates different webbings, different hardware, and different slackline technology to move our sport forward. And so that would be where I'd recommend to get a slackline. But if you're really strapped, you can also just go buy a ratchet on like Amazon or something. Those are pieces of shit usually, but right. It's a place to start. If you don't want to spend a couple hundred bucks like right off the bat, and you're like, let me just see if I can get into this, you can do that if you're lazy. If you're not lazy, you can go on YouTube and type in primitive slacklines. And a primitive slackline is something that you can get all the materials at like REI, and you can build it yourself. It just takes a little bit of effort. You got to look into it. You got to learn the rigging. But those are the ways that I would say getting in if you want to get into it beforehand.
Yeah, I would also suggest
hit us up on Facebook. We have like DMV slackliners, East Coast slackliners, Southeast slackliners, PA slackers, Pittsburgh slackers, Philly slackers, New York City slackers. Those are all separate slacklining Facebook groups for like the individual areas. So basically nowadays you can pretty much find a slacklining group for I won't say almost every city, but like any major city for sure. And then even smaller cities as well. You'll find us. We're there. We're very active. If you're interested in slacklining, come find us. We are a very welcoming crowd.
That's what I was going to say. Like every Sunday I see the slackliners at Meridian Hill Park.
Yeah.
That's a good place to go if you're in the DC area. Sure. They're always setting up on Sundays and they seem very welcoming to letting new people come and try.
I'd love to have people try. Yeah. Because it's this thing that on its face of it, it looks so improbable. People go, I can't do that. The first thing I tell people is like, you can do this too. They see a picture of me on a high line and they're like,
a little crazy.
You're like, I could never do this. But
I don't know if I would get on the slack line if Ethan looked at me like that.
You can do it too.
Trust me.
Just trust me.
Get on the slack line.
Exactly.
All right, Ethan. I'm going to throw a random question at you. If you could eat one food for a year, what would it be?
Avocados.
Oh, well, guess what? Avocados Anonymous is playing for the second year in a row at Beauty in the Backyard.
Do they bring avocados? Do they
bring the avocados? You have to go to their set to find out.
Dude, fuck yeah. What?
Yeah, they smear avocados, and then especially Phil Avocado himself.
For real?
Yeah, this is a real thing. It's a real band, and they are playing
they
again.
They smear avocados?
You just have to wait and see. It's pretty intense. And we have a lot of really cool things happening this year, but again, like I want to dive a little deeper.
More into the slacklining.
So there's low line for people that have no clue.
Let me,
there's low lines, which will be accessible to people, and you'll be there to hold their hand if they want and help them learn, be a few feet off the ground. And then midlines are a bit higher. Will those be open to the public?
So we're going to actually just go with the term high lines. And we're going to do that to avoid confusion. Well, okay. By technicality, what we will be rigging would more likely be called midlines. Okay. But because it's kind of, even between slackliners, there's like this gray area where we're like, well, is it a midline or is it a high line?
Uh-huh.
For the sake of communication with our participants who are not familiar, we're just going to call them high lines because everyone gets what a high line is.
Okay.
So anyway. Sidebar.
So like, say I'm like, hey, I'm really good at slacklining. I want to get on the high line. Are you going to like test me or something?
Yeah. So if you tell me that, well, first of all, if you can get up to a high line, I probably already know you. Like,
Wow, it's that close knit.
It is. Especially at least on the East Coast. On the East Coast is very particular in its community because there are only so many places that we can go practice this this art form, and so everyone who wants to do this all knows each other, and we all have to travel to the same places to do it. If you're on the West Coast,
get to travel.
Yes. Get to travel.
Have the opportunity to
travel. Right, it's definitely an opportunity, for sure, for sure. If you're on the West Coast, it gets a little more cliquish because there are these amazing areas all over the place. So people can stay in their respective areas and have all the highlighting they want, and they never need to connect. They do anyway, but not in the way that we have to here. Like, we're required as a community, and so it creates something a little different.
Yeah.
But
I think you said you use the word have to because your life depends on it, is what you're saying.
No, we have to, because if we want to practice, there's only these very particular areas that facilitate highlighting. Like, okay. It is not trivial to, at least on the East Coast, it can be in places on the West Coast, like if you go to Moab, but on the East Coast, to find natural places that can support highlining, like that you have two anchors with an open space below you, that with like a lot of open space below you, that doesn't exist a lot here. And so we have to look far and wide to find
that. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So, okay.
But let me get back to beauty and like
exactly. Highlines. I was about to ask you, Nick. Oh, well, you want to talk about the highlines first?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool, so, you were asking, like,
more stuff to talk about.
Can someone just get on a highline or when they're at beauty? So, if I have not personally met them, which there's a slim chance if they're going to get on a highline, it's probably going to be someone who's maybe done a little bit of slacklining before, and they're like, hey, you know, I've got a sit start. And then I would say, okay, if you want to get on a high line, let's go over to one of these lines. We're going to tie you into a leash. I'm going to have you practice some things, and then we'll facilitate that. Like, I'm happy to take someone who has some experience with rigging and ropes and slacklining and teach them if they want to do that. But for the most part, no. Right, people who are coming to Beauty in the Backyard who have no experience slacklining are not going to be getting on these lines. They won't even be able to, because the only way up these trees is going to be a fixed line. You know, you're going to have a fixed rope that you have to have all the equipment to get up. And if you don't already know how to do that, it's self-limiting in that way. You can't get up if you don't have the gear and the knowledge.
So what else are you bringing to Beauty in the Backyard?
Okay, all right.
Wait, before we give it all away, hold on a second.
You're teasing.
Make sure we talk about the same thing.
Yeah,
one thing at a time.
Justin's in the way of the apples. This is a fun podcast.
Yeah. All right. Let me start. Let me go. Okay. So, first we're gonna have low lines. Low lines will be the kinds of lines that are accessible to everyone. Anyone can get on them at any level. They will be like a foot or two off the ground. You put a foot up, you try and walk it. We'll have various setups that will facilitate people working together if they haven't done this before, and because it can be very discouraging. You know, you get on a slack line, it throws you, it kicks you right off, and you're like, you know what, fuck this. Keep doing that.
Exactly. Stop touching
the mic. I know. People, they can't do it, and so they get frustrated really quickly, and we want to avoid that. We want to give people an enjoyable experience, even though they might not actually be able to do it on their own. And so there are different ways of doing that. One, like I mentioned earlier, very simply, is someone walks by you, they put a hand up, and then that person is able to grab their hand as they need. You never hold the person yourself. That's a kind of a mistake you'll see often when people first try. They'll want to hold their friend to try and, or especially children. Parents will want to like grab their kids by the shoulders to make sure they don't fall, but you got to let them balance themselves. And so there'll be various things that we have set up in order to elevate people's experience on the low line, so that if you don't have experience, you're able to do it. The next level up from that will be long lines. So long lines are like low lines. They're just a little bit longer and sometimes a lot higher, usually not too much higher. They can be much, much higher, but they are lines that you don't wear a harness, you don't put on a leash, they're just over the ground and you walk them. They can be anywhere from I don't know if you might consider a long line like 100 feet anywhere to the longest long line that I've rigged personally is like 1,200 feet on a farm, right? Wow. So we don't know exactly what the distances are that we'll be able to use at Beauty, but I'm hoping somewhere at least in the 100 meter, so like 300 to 400 feet, if we can go longer, we'll do that. But as you get longer with long lines, it gets exceedingly more difficult to rig them because you need the tension and the curvature in the ground to work. So we'll have the long lines. Those will be open to anyone. We'll have those also at varying levels in its own realm. So there'll be easier long lines and harder ones. After the long lines, that's where we get to the high lines. And then the high lines, those will be mostly performance, because if you don't know how to high line, if you don't know how to ascend a rope, and you don't know all of like the skills needed to do that, you're not going to do it in the first place. But we've got a big crew of people coming out. It will not feel like, when you see these people doing this, it's not going to feel like they're performing. You're just going to see a bunch of monkeys. We refer to ourselves as monkeys. Doing a bunch of like crazy shenanigans. Yeah, exactly. On these lines, and they'll come down, they'll be done with a session, and like they're just gonna fuse right back into the event. Like it's gonna be very seamless. It's not gonna be, I mean, we can do a more formal performance, and maybe we'll do something like that, but for the most part, you're just gonna see us sessioning. You're just gonna see us like getting on these lines, like putting in some music maybe, or hopefully listening to whatever noise is going on around, and we're just gonna be like jamming with the crowd and with everyone else. And so those will be the middle, or excuse me, the high lines. And I'm hoping to have 5 of those. That's our goal. That's a big goal. If we can have 5 high lines, that will have accomplished a lot. So that those are the slack lines. After that, we've got space nets.
And what is a space net, Ethan?
A space net is an elaborate hammock that's meant to hold as many people as you can build it to do safely. Okay. And so essentially what they are is like, take a hammock, add like more points to it. So 3, 4, 5 connection points. And we build them. So I build them. I have several friends who build space nets, and essentially through different techniques of rope work. So with paracord, with spliceable ropes, with regular like climbing rope, you'll have a perimeter, and then you'll just net and weave a bunch of rope together until it's dense enough that a person can sit, lay, stand, or do other things on it. And so they're really great for lounging. They're cool. Wonderful for like splaying out in. And they're typically rigged with trees. You know, you have a bunch of trees around, you use your anchors.
Or domes.
Or domes. Yeah, domes work really well too, as we know. And hopefully
throwback and flashback to Catharsis Ethan actually rigged up a space net in our dome at Catharsis. And that was such a cool moment.
It was lit.
Check out the video.
Yeah, it was sick. And so we will hopefully have, but my intention is that there will be a couple of different spaces activated with individual nets, but then there's going to be a big installation, and this is where I'm actually personally investing my time in organizing this, because obviously I'm kind of overseeing a lot of things, but my intention is I have team leaders, and they're taking over their teams and taking care of these, you know, low lines, mid lines, high lines. And the place that I'll be focusing personally is on the space nets with a few other members of our crew.
I think you may be leaving out one giant thing that will also be
right.
Let's just give everybody a chance to guess what massive thing.
Yeah, massive, very large.
It's actually already been mentioned on this podcast. Some of the listeners, if they've been listening, might be able to hint at it, but I have been listening and I have heard it mentioned.
Okay. The one thing I somehow forgot. Actually, there are a couple things, but the big thing that I've left out here.
This also fell into our laps.
Definitely fell into our laps. Is a hot air balloon high line.
What?
Yeah, I still can't believe it, honestly.
So, what are you and your team going to be attempting?
So,
with a hot air balloon high line.
Okay, so Great.
Has anything like this ever happened at a festival like this?
No, definitely not at a festival. This has been this has been done a couple
Creative
of times.
Creative Arts Retreat.
Creative Arts Retreat. Yes, excuse me. This has been done a couple of times, but yeah, we have a fellow, his name's Patrick, who has some hot air balloons, and he would just like to attempt breaking some records, and so we're gonna try and make that happen at Beauty in the Backyard. One of the records is the height record, so Patrick would like to take the balloons to 10,000 feet. And we'll have a couple people from our crew who are both slackliners and skydivers who are going to walk this and then jump and then hopefully land back in the retreat. Back in the backyard. We'll see. I
don't think Davis Lee even knew this. he hasn't been keeping up on the chats. That's not
true. And then actually just today, I don't know if we're going to do this, but this was an idea thrown out by Jeremiah, who you guys just met, based out of Hawaii, who I think is going to be joining us.
Guys, we have people coming all the way from Hawaii to be in the backyard. Yeah, this is, it's probably the farthest distance that someone's traveled.
Assuming California is last year. Yeah. I think it's the first. Yeah, definitely. I mean,
we need someone to come from New Zealand. I think that might be the.
I mean, that would be halfway around the world, right? Like, basically. So we're going to attempt maybe another record, because this one's super easy, relatively, which is the length record with hot air balloons. Because from what I'm told, with hot air balloons, when you want to rig a highline between them, the balloons actually have to be touching. They have to be like up against each other. Because if you have them like far apart and you have someone in the middle of the line, it's just going to sink down and the balloons are going to come together. So you got to have those balloons touching, which really limits how long you can have them. And so it seems like we might, this is not confirmed, so I don't know, but we'll see, try to tether down the balloons some predetermined distance apart and then rig a line between them. So it probably won't be more than 50 or 100 feet high. Everyone will be able to be right under it and look up and see it. And then hopefully we'll have a highline rigged, you know, like just like 50, 100 feet off the ground. That'll be like, you know, a couple hundred feet long. Would be the goal. We'll see. This is all very preliminary. I don't want to create any expectations here, but this is what we're working with.
Wow. That's a lot to think about, honestly.
Yeah.
Granted, we just got off the phone with our medical team, and they will have a fully staffed medical team and be in the backyard this year.
That's
so
exciting.
Whatever happens, we've got the professionals.
We do.
Yeah, so.
We'll be taken care of.
So yeah, we're really excited, and you mentioned a few Facebook groups and stuff. But how can people connect with you, Ethan, before the event? They might have questions. They might want to check out your page.
Right.
How can people connect with you?
So you can connect with me at on Instagram at SpaceWorks. That's the little thing that I've been trying to start. I only have like 80 followers.
SpaceWorks, we follow you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm new to this social media thing. I've tried to avoid it for a long time, but I'm coming around. I'm learning. And then I'd like to throw a big shout out to Steel City Slackers. That's sort of the crew that we're going to be rigging under in sort of an umbrella way. Like everyone on the slacklining crew is falling under Steel City Slackers.
Okay.
And Steel City Slackers is the slackline crew based out of Pittsburgh. That's made up of all of our friends. And that is kind of how we've been spreading a lot of our slackline gospel through.
And for all of the slackliners listening to this podcast and you want a discount on your Beauty in the Backyard ticket, what's the promo code?
Slack, BITB, all caps.
Nice. There
you go. And just keep in mind, when you use that code, you support Ethan and his slacklining efforts. So whatever code you end up using for tickets to be in the backyard, you are supporting that person or that organization. So we keep track of those things, and we want to reward people for bringing in friends and inviting friends and everything like that. I want to ask you one more question, Ethan. What is your most valuable insight?
My most valuable insight.
I know it's kind of a hard one, but I'm curious. I think
life sucks and then you die.
Wow.
And the podcast is over. No, I'm just kidding.
Not to be pessimistic.
And that's why I rig things up 10,000 feet in the sky and don't care if I fall.
But you know, hey man, you know, we lived extraordinarily privileged lives, and I think like it is easy from where we're sitting to be like, man, life is so great. Like I'm having such a great time. Like look at this, I can be happy, I can be fulfilled intellectually, emotionally. But I don't think most of the world lives like that, and I think it's good to take stock of that. Like most people live hard, hard lives, and so. You know, and I that's at the forefront of my brain because of the work that I do. I see people who are struggling like the most. Well, some of the most. I think probably in other parts of the world you'll see people struggle even more.
As a nurse.
But so, yeah, as a nurse. I mean, like, I see people who have very, very little quality of life. And so, you know, I try to always keep that in mind. Despite how morbid that may be, there's the flip side, the beauty of it, which is that I get to take full advantage, and I try and spread that as much as I can.
Amazing, Ethan. Well, this has certainly been a very fun podcast for me. I hope you enjoyed it. And for everybody else that's listening, we'll be posting the links for that to connect with Ethan and the Steel City Slackers. That's a tongue twister, by the way.
Steel City Slackers.
And as always, to keep up to date with what we are doing, you can check out our website. That's metacreative.world. Two T's, M-E-T-T-A, creative.world. And to see Beauty in the Backyard, you can go to thebackyard.world. Go to our upcoming experiences on our homepage. Check that out. You know, see all the cool things we have coming up. We have a new flyer being released with workshops, games, visual artists, performing artists. I think we nearly have close to 100 performing artists.
On that note, let me just throw one more shout out out there because in addition to the slack lines and the space nets, we're also bringing a ton of aerial workshops and exciting things. We're going to have Ben Emmett. He's going to be doing a handstand workshop. We'll have Taryn Mole. She's going to be doing silk performance and workshops.
Yes.
I know there's already a bunch of acro yoga going on there, but we're bringing some like studs or whatever the female version of a stud is.
Wow.
For acro with Rachel Dobos. So we're bringing a bunch of fun stuff.
Yeah, and for anyone deciding on what to do that weekend, we do know there's a lot of other things happening that weekend. Just take in mind the diversity of offerings that we're bringing to our retreat. And whatever you decide, make sure that you feel right in your heart and enjoy.
Google crate stacking. You're going to see some crazy shit. Well, that'll be there. And anyone can do that.
Yes. And as always, this has been an episode of the Meta Makers Podcast. Woo! Collaborative arts.
Inspiring sustainability.
Thanks for listening.